This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey, good morning, everybody. Sorry we're a couple minutes late there. We quite literally blew away out at Nafsker Park. It's a little windy out here. Not as cold as it was yesterday, if you were with us, but windier. That wind is supposed to die down just in time for the festivities today, but man, we had to make a pivot, and we'll get started here by saying thanks to our friends at Homegrown right there at Nafsker Park for letting us come inside. We're going to have some breakfast. We will give them plenty of publicity because we greatly appreciate them letting us come grab a table to do the show with you for the next 3 hours and 45 minutes today. A little bit abbreviated. Jacob Albrock here alongside Tommy Caster. Max Power, keeping things together for us while we made this pivot. We appreciate that, Max. Appreciate Tony out here. I bet you the attendance was higher this year than 2018. Nafsker didn't exist then, so you had this place. It was packed most of the day. And then across, like, around the corner at Union Station, like, we kept looking for all the Mizzou fans. I was like, where are all the Mizzou fans? Yeah. They were all over there.
Yeah.
So that place, the only place I didn't make it down to yesterday was into Old Town, but I know they were doing fine. And then back on the south side of the arena where everything was in 2018, it was also still packed. Like, all the events and stuff were over there. So you had, like, four or five different large gatherings of people in and out of the arena. I think you spent more time in the arena than I did yesterday. I was out here doing TV stuff, but the crowds inside the arena were very representative, I think, which you don't always know what's going to happen inside the arenas at these regional sites. But we had, especially for the night session, we had big crowds in there.
Yeah, it was really good. In fact, I know that both sessions, like, one was announced, I think, at like 14,500, and then the other one was just under 15,000. I believe that was the evening session. And so you had great representation for all four games yesterday, and you had fan bases. All the fan bases came out in full force, and then you had Wichita come out in full force as well. It was just a huge party when you're mixing in the locals and you're mixing in all the different fan bases. It was a great atmosphere.
So Saturday will be great. We know Saturday will be great. I'll be curious to see today without games, of course, the practice sessions. But, you know, a lot of those out of town, you know, the Tech fans, there'll be more of them probably coming in today. The Drake fans will hang around. We'll lose the Mizzou fans as far as the big, you know, fan bases that were here. But we were, you know, we have a lot of Houston fans in town. Gonzaga, not as many, but I wonder if they won't come in now for the weekend. So we'll see. But all of this stuff out here today is still happening. I know Odyssey will have a booth set up for the day. I mean, it's 10 to 10 again. Here we go.
Yeah. You know, they've got FanFest activated, Parks and Rec do all day long, beginning at 10 a.m. And going until 10 p.m. tonight. And even though there are not actual games that are happening here in Wichita today, it's the day off. All of the other games at their other regional sites will be up on the big screen here at Nafsker Park. They'll have, you know, tons of activations with the food trucks and the beer trucks and all the yard games, the cornhole, that all the different things that they'll be doing here at Nafsker Park that'll continue all day long.
Yeah, Odyssey will have its booth. DJ again today, I assume, Tommy. Yeah. I know the K-Witch crew, the promotions crew, was out here yesterday. They've got like a cool mini golf game and some Papa Shot. And then there's a bunch of stuff from Parks and Rec. They had their games, cornhole you mentioned, and the bars. Everything will be here. It'll be awesome.
And it's going to be a lot warmer today as the day goes on. It'll be breezy.
Yeah.
But it'll be not
like it is right now.
Not like it is right now. It won't be quite as bad as the day goes on. I think it's supposed to die down here a little bit, at least mid-morning to early afternoon.
Yeah, it's about right. And remember, we're taking you live for the next 3 hours and change here. It will die down. I was checking this morning, right as we're getting off the air. So right about the time games start, and it'll be fun to get down here, watch a game, have a beer, whatever. That's when we should get a little better weather. And then tomorrow looks beautiful. I mean, tomorrow's going to be incredible. We'll talk more about tomorrow, the schedule of things as we make our way through. You had two blowout games in the early session here, and then two really good games late.
Yeah, thank goodness the evening session were better matchups, like competitively, because after the first two games, it was like, man, can we actually get a competitive game of basketball?
Well, you expected it with Houston, right, but not with an 8-9. Totally. And Gonzaga, who is a top 10-ish team by all the metrics, gets an 8 seed. And now most people I've talked to around here have picked Houston. And I guess it shouldn't surprise me as much as it initially did, because we all watched them in the Big 12. That's going to be an incredible game tomorrow night. And then, you know, Tech and Drake's going to be in. We're going to have two unbelievable games getting into the Sweet 16 tomorrow. And we get the evening session tomorrow, which is also interesting. But we'll have some of the evening games, and that'll be a lot of fun. So looking forward to all of that.
I'll tell you right now that Houston is not thrilled. They probably weren't initially anyway, but after yesterday, not thrilled that Gonzaga is an 8 seed, because Gonzaga looked phenomenal yesterday.
They're a great team. I mean, they're a top 15 type team probably, but Houston's the top team. I mean, Houston has a claim to be the best team in the country. They had a claim at being the number one overall seed, so it's okay. I mean, look, you got to get through these teams anyway. I know you know, are we really judging Houston based on, you know, a round of 32 win this year, or are they kind of more of a Final Four or bust type team? I would say the latter.
I think they're a Final Four or bust type team. I think anything short of that,
got to get there, right?
Anything short of that is, I think, considered a postseason disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like doing that so much with the NCAA tournament, because it is wild and wacky, and because you do get random matchups against teams like, you know, Houston. I mean, like Gonzaga randomly. But I will say, like, internally, that's got to be the expectation for Houston. I don't think if they got busted, it would be a disappointing season. I think an unbelievable season.
Well, I think the question
they'd be just disappointed with the outcome of the
tournament. Question then becomes, if not now, then when for the Cougars?
Right.
I think that would be the major question with this team if they bow out early is, if not now with this team, with this coach, with the returners, with the program, if not now, then when?
I mean, Bill Self would have something to say about that. It took a while. I mean, this is that's the thing about the NCAA tournament. It's why we love it. But it is so hard to make it through. It's what gives Coach K his claim to be the best that's ever done it, is because he navigated this tournament as good as you can. It's why Dan Hurley has been on top of the world, because we just can't imagine anybody making two runs through this tournament anymore. It's insane. Bill Self, if not the best, one of the best to ever do it, has done it twice with great teams almost this year, notwithstanding great teams every year. So I mean, Houston could be right back here next year. And again, I'm taking Houston over Gonzaga. I haven't looked at the early line on that game. I guess we can.
And I would imagine it's a closer line than what it probably everybody expected.
Points.
Yeah. I was, you know, in my mind initially, I'm like, okay, if it's a Houston Gonzaga matchup in the second round, I probably initially would have thought closer to 10, maybe 8 to 9 points.
Oh, these spreads are
but
great.
But five seems about right with the way that we saw Gonzaga perform yesterday.
There's not a big spread. There's not a double digit spread on Saturday.
I love
that. We'll get into those bets. We'll get into today's bets too. You know what, Tommy? I'm going to need to do a little live betting on I didn't make my bets last night. We got so cut up. So we're gonna have to find some bets today for everybody too. If you have bets, if you have reads on things, you can leave us those. You can call them in at 869-1240, or you can leave them on our video streams. Of course, thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, but then on Facebook, YouTube, X. If you have bets, let's make some together, because I forgot, and I will need to make some today. So let us know what you're thinking. We'll get into Kansas today. We'll get into some of the other headlines. The Chiefs, with another significant move we need to spend some time with. We'll have Jalen Thompson should be in.
Yeah, I think so.
He should be in the second hour here. So coming up in about an hour from now, we'll check in on the Royals. This will be the final check-in with Jalen before the season starts.
Before opening day.
Yeah, so we'll probably have some things we need to discuss there and get finalized with Jalen Thompson. That's all coming today. Again, we are live at Homegrown. I can't thank them enough for letting us pop over here and come inside. It was a mess.
Yeah, you know how I knew that it was going to be okay for us to come to Homegrown was because they brought us Pop-Tarts and coffee yesterday.
So
I'm like, okay, they're friendly. Like, let's go ask for something more from them. And like, it was a, here's the best part about it. A little behind the scenes action. It's 10 minutes before we go live. Wind's blowing everywhere. Our operations manager, Tony Dusing, is blowing away out there.
Somebody could have taken a picture of
him. He weighs like a buck 40, dripping wet. So he's like holding on for dear life. And we're like, this isn't going to work. Walk in, you know, ask the folks here at Homegrown. And it was, there was no deliberation from their part.
Yeah.
It was immediate. Absolutely. You're welcome to come in. You're welcome to take up a booth. And that's the kind of, honestly, that's the kind of Wichita hospitality.
Yes.
That I know everybody coming in for this tournament always talks about. And, you know, we were able to be the recipient of that this morning. So that's fantastic.
Bear with us as we, you know, talk about the community here in this first segment. Then we'll get to KU in the second segment. But the whole thing, like I couldn't stop smiling yesterday at all the sites I've been to over the years, all the places. And it's not just this. I mean, you can take it down to the TBT, Tom. It doesn't matter what it is. This is the largest scale thing, I think, for this part of the city to collectively get together on. But my goodness, like, and it's all like same team mentality, right? Like it's all, of course, there are businesses down here trying to make a living and do their thing. But all of it, like it's everybody just wants and is so happy to see our city put on display like this. That's the, like the sense of community pride of it. It's just really cool to see and deliver time and time again on stuff like this. And as it was sunny and there were just people everywhere, and I was talking as I was doing news hits in the afternoon, and apart we had crews talking to everybody, like everybody, every out of towner. I can't believe this. I talked to a guy from Georgia yesterday, a guy from Dallas, like I just can't believe this. Like I didn't know Wichita was like this. Yep. I didn't have any idea. And it's like that, you know, that's the point. I think, and that's why everybody gets so excited that's from here to see this. And I love it. Like, this is what it's all about. And I've never seen sites two times now, like Wichita's been able to do this. And this time, Tommy, there wasn't the crutch of having Kansas or Kansas State, who we thought might be an option before the season, didn't have that crutch.
Yeah, you couldn't have that fallback of all of the local fans of both KU and K-State. You know, being able to have their team play here, that didn't happen this year. And so, you know, there was a regional draw yesterday. You had folks driving in from Columbia, Missouri, and from Des Moines, Iowa for Drake. And, you know, of course, the Texas teams and all of that. I'm glad, even though, you know, Missouri didn't win, I would imagine there'll be a great Drake contingent tomorrow coming in from Des Moines. That's not a terrible drive. And then, you know, of course, you've got both Texas Tech and Houston advancing on. I would imagine there'll be a good Tech contingent driving up from Lubbock. And that's the other thing, too, is that while there are fewer games here in Wichita tomorrow, there are only two instead of four like yesterday, it's on the weekend. And so you've got these fans that maybe couldn't take the time off work to come up for a Thursday game, but they could absolutely come a Saturday game from Lubbock or Des Moines or even Houston and, you know, be able to experience this in this city. And with they basically got a trip to the Sweet 16 on the line for these teams.
I've got Tech people, because I'm from Tech's part of the world, that have already reached out and been like, hey, are you around? We're going to come up Saturday. Like, let's grab a beer. And I'm like, heck yeah. Like, come on up. Like, let's come see this party and you won't believe where you are. I mean, you won't believe it. I mean, you wouldn't come into Wichita in Old Town anyway and see it and be like, whoa, what is this? Because it's so aesthetically pleasing and really cool anyway. Now you're really not going to believe it. And look, is it bigger than yesterday? I don't know. But you'll have more people, I think, just from even from the community here that are able to come. I mean, if nothing else, if you're thinking about it, it's going to be a beautiful day.
It's going to be gorgeous.
Like that's the reason as much as anything, just especially with this Napster Park area now.
And our games are in the evening on Saturday, right?
They are. Yep. We got a 5 o'clock tip and a 7:30 basically. I think it's 5:10 and 7:40. So that will be, in my opinion, even better too, because you're a part of when all the games are happening, right? So you could have been, there's two games that happen early and then like all the rest of the games happen after 3 o'clock. So, or it might even be after 4 o'clock.
Yeah, so, you're right. So there are only two games before 4 o'clock yet. It's the McNeese Purdue game at 11:10, and then the Arkansas St. John matchup at 1:40, and then after that, you've got 4:15, and then our game here, Drake Tech, Texas Tech at 5:10.
Yeah, after that, you get like six games, yeah. I think, and so all of that. That's what made yesterday so cool, is because you had all the games on and all these different places. So it'll be a fun place to just take in the NCAA tournament as much as anything Saturday. So we'll get to all of that. It's going to be great. It's going to be great today too. This wind will die down. We had, God, if you could have seen us. We were worried yesterday. We were like, yeah, it's going to be pretty windy. I mean, we were just concerned a little bit about the noise in the microphones.
Yeah.
And then we get out here and I'm like, ooh. And then, of course, you know how it goes. You're like, oh, no, it'll be
okay.
Yeah, we'll be fine. And then so we bring over the table and forgive everybody. Please forgive me the next 4 hours for my loss of voice from yesterday. We tried to put the tent up. You know, the tents that visualize the tents, you know, like that you have at events, the big overheads that we crammed that down and tried to turn it on its side to give us like a back wind block. And we had the weights on there. We're like, this is perfect. And then about 2 minutes later, it's like, man, the top of that thing's going to snap over the top of us here in about 5 minutes. And then at that point, it was like 10 minutes before the show. And we're like, we got to pivot somehow.
Yeah.
And then Tommy came over, talked to these nice folks at Homegrown who have become our friends because they brought us Pop-Tarts yesterday. Now they're really our friends. We're going to be having breakfast here.
What are you going to order for breakfast, by the way? What do you like at Homegrown?
It's the West Coast Wake Up.
Okay.
Which is a scramble. And then I'd get the onions out of there and put in green chilies.
Okay.
And then they have a green salsa verde that they have on, and I get some of that. They heat it up, and I just smother that thing in that green salsa, get it every time I come here, and it is incredible. And then they put, you know, the potatoes and stuff with it. It's so good.
And a little disclaimer, this is not an advertisement.
Like, it is not
paying for any of this. I mean, like, we just needed a place to do a show. And
but it will be because they were kind for us.
They were definitely great.
And we're going to give them some love because they have been so friendly and gracious the last couple of days. And they'll be open for lunch, too, if you come back, by the way. So we got about a minute here. Kansas is what we'll talk about next. We've been, you know, going all roses and sunshine here because the Kansas conversation is uncomfortable. And yesterday's game was exactly what we saw the entire season from Kansas. So while it shouldn't surprise us, it was still as slap in the face with how frustrating the season has been for the reasons it has been frustrating. I mean, it was the perfect representation of their entire season. And now they got busted for the first time in the first round for the first time in a long time. They continue to not be able to reach the Sweet 16 other than the national championship year. In 2022, Kansas has not reached the Sweet 16, but that one time since 2018. We're going to get into all of that. What does it all mean? Big picture. Anything? We'll hit that next. Stick around, everybody. More Sports Daily live from Homegrown right outside National Park. We'll be right back.
Commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. We are live at Homegrown here in Navsker Park. Appreciate them for letting us pop in here during the wind. The wind will die down just in time for the tournament, but it is windy right now out there. And we are having some fun. Kansas is not going to be a fun conversation. That's what we'll have. Before we do that, though, Tommy, did you catch you were We were over there in the arena yesterday. We're in and out of the media room. Did you catch what kind of coffee they had there in the media room?
Did they have Prairie Fire?
They had Prairie Fire Coffee. Prairie Fire Coffee. We appreciate them always keeping us back at the Odyssey Studios, but we had them here in the arena too. That was nice. Thanks, Prairie Fire Coffee, for that. All right. Kansas. You don't even have to ask. Like, if I told you Kansas lost that game, why do you think they lost it? I think we'd all have the answer. It's the same answer. And it's not like because they couldn't defend the 3-point shot, you know, which is a problem for them, certainly. But the much bigger problem is what played through. They were in a position to win the game late, and they pooped their pants, for lack of a better and more. Where's the?
Yeah.
There is something else I would like to say there.
Yeah.
That, you know, for the lack of a better term, happens in the bed sometimes. You know what I mean? They had 6 turnovers. They had the lead with roughly 4 minutes to go and turned the ball over 6 times in 3.5 minutes. That is hard to do on purpose, let alone accidentally.
Right.
And it is insane to even like they had a stretch where they got down, I think it was 12, and you were like, they're not going to win this game. And then they locked down defensively, did what they do, and they chipped away and they chipped away and they struggled offensively to make up the ground. There was a point where they had Arkansas like scoreless for 4 minutes, and they only made up like 3 points, I think, in that stretch, but they were grinding it out, and that's what they do. They hit a couple shots, they get the lead, and you're like, all right, they're good. And then literally the thing that has happened to them in all of their big moments this year happened again, even more amplified than ever before. And it's like this, I mean, how is that your identity with older players? Hunter Dickinson was really bad in the game. He was a contributor.
He was really bad in the second half.
He was a contributor to the turnovers. He couldn't score.
Yeah.
And then he was turning it over. Dewan Harris, who really did pick it up in the second half after he was off to a bad start, turned it over a couple of times. Zeke Mayo,
consistent offensive threat that you have is AJ Storr. You know, that's an issue. That's a problem for the Jayhawks. And look, I think that I've said it before, I'll say it again, it just is what it is. This particular Kansas team is the most unclutched team.
It's crazy.
That Bill Self has ever had.
And there are a lot of good reasons for that. Dewan Harris is not a scorer. And the clutch for KU for years has been they've got guards that can go get buckets. They don't have that. Zeke Mayo can shoot, but he's too out of control with the ball to just go get buckets that way. Hunter Dickinson is not his skill set. And KJ Adams, who was talking to some KU fans last night, like KJ Adams is great on most teams. But when you need buckets, it's hard for him, and that's been a problem for people. And I hate that for times it's been like it ever reflected back to KJ Adams, and we'll get to his injury in a second, but it's not him. It's the fit, because he's great. He's a great player. It's that they don't get what they need from other places, and so people look at him, and they're like, well, why can't he go shoot a three? It's not his game. And so it was not a good fit. Was not a good fit last year, not a good fit this year. And so big picture, I'm actually not worried about it. I think that makes it mean less for the program. I think you had a lot invested. I think Bill Self loves these guys, and it just wasn't working. And now he's going to get to go start over. The portal players the last couple of years have not worked out well. That's the part we got to see, because now it's going to be probably – I mean, if KU's lucky, it will be 4 portal players, Flory Badunga, and Diggy Court off the bench next year. That will be the team. That will be the starting lineup. It did not work with portal players the last 2 years. So there are 2 things happening. 1, you get a reset, which is a good thing. But 2, now you've got to go do something. You know, Remy Martin was a great portal player in the end. He wasn't during the season because he was hurt. But what are you going to do?
I mean, I do think that there is a pretty decent chance that this team is going to be built around Darren Peter. I know he's a freshman.
That doesn't work.
I know he's the biggest highly touted freshman.
They can have a freshman
that's had.
They can have a freshman that's the best player.
But I can't have
the freshman be the clutch guy.
What I'm saying is that I think that, you know, the roster construction for Self will be how can we provide the supporting pieces to make Darren Peterson as successful as possible. That's the way that I think you have to look at going and attacking the portal. I think you have to look at that and figure out, okay, what do we do to amplify Peterson and make sure that he is the most successful freshman that we've ever had on this team. You know, especially considering that more than likely he's a one and done type guy. He's the highest recruit that, you know, Bill Self, I think, has ever had in his time at Kansas. And so we've seen that pan out before. We've seen it not pan out before.
Sure.
For Kansas and for the Jayhawks. And, you know, this is going to be one that I think it's going to be that much more essential for Self to figure out how do you put the pieces around him to make sure that they have a lot more success than they had this year.
That can't just, that just can't be like, he can be your best player. Grady Dick was Gatorade National Player of the Year. Like, that is company reserved for some of the best players of all time. But they didn't ask Grady Dick to be that dude, right? They let him go out and be himself. And you know, honestly, he was even a little bit reserved. But you like, Badunga, Peterson, okay, but they still are going to have to, like, Bill Self should probably, if I'm Bill Self, I've got an arrival here to Wichita here pretty quick so I can come get a look at Bennett Sturts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be that kind of thing that they have to do.
Can we talk about Bennett Sturts for a second?
Jerome Tang was here yesterday, by the way.
That dude is outstanding, and he looks so unassuming.
Ice water.
Looks unassuming. Looks, I mean, he looks like you and me,
yeah.
Right? Like, and he's fearless. Like, watching him in that game last night, I mean, he was getting to the bucket. And, you know, even when he wasn't, like, shooting unconscious from three, which he was, he had like a one-footed floater that went in for three that he nailed. When he wasn't doing that, he was getting to the rim. And then when he wasn't even shooting, he was distributing. And, I mean, that kid, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he follows Ben McCollum, if McCollum goes somewhere, if they can pay him or whatever. Because I think he's loyal to his coach,
I
right?
I do, too. I don't think McCollum's going to go anywhere yet, because I think if he waits a year, he can get him a better job. If he goes, he might want to stay at Drake. You know, you never know. Guys wait that long time to get in there, and Drake probably feels a lot more like his comfort zone in Division II than a lot of places would. So that's hard to predict. A kid from Missouri should, like, K-State and KU and probably Mizzou should be all over it, at least trying to figure it out. Now, I'm not saying tamper. I'm making jokes, but, like, you've got to go after players like that, especially if yourself, maybe less so Tang. But especially for yourself, because you're going to have the flair, right? With Peterson and even Badunga, who Badunga flashed last night, they have got to keep him around. That has to be top priority. That alley-oop where he went up and got it on a really bad pass was wild, wild stuff. But you got to have those guys. Diggy Coit will give you something, but it's going to take going to get, I mean, what do you want to call it? Three of the top 20 transfer type guys, I think, to satisfy the need for the fan base to feel good. But they had that this year, and AJ Storr and Ryland Griffin were supposed to be the saviors. And honestly, the issues that they had, Tommy, it's not like Bill Self didn't go try to attack those issues.
And he said that in post game, you know, he said that, like, he went out and, you know, got Griffin and Storr, and not just those guys, Shaq Moore, Diggy Coit.
Shaq, like, Moore was, you know, hurt. I mean, that's,
he went out and got a couple of guys, you know, to be contributors.
But not even contributors.
To be a core.
If shooting threes is your problem,
yeah,
and being a clutch shot maker is your problem, which they were last year, and Bill Self knew that, he went and got, like, the two top dudes.
I think it's just fair to say he missed. Like,
well,
they collectively missed the transfer guys, and, you know, you can't. Unfortunately, you don't have the luxury of being able to make changes once you get them in, and, like, all of that. You just got to get ready for next year. And it was a bad roster collection. It was a bad, you know, just overall makeup of this team. I mentioned, like, super unclutch. There hasn't been a Kansas team that I can remember, at least since I was a kid. You know, there were a couple of not amazing years for Roy Williams, but at least in the Bill Self era, where in a close game down the stretch, I felt less confident in Kansas doing anything. Like, in fact, I felt like they're more likely to not get it done than they are to figure out a way to get it done. There were a lot of firsts this year for this Jayhawks team, and very few of those firsts were good.
I can remember one team that was as unclutch as this team, last year's team.
True. Yeah. But it wasn't as magnified last year because
we didn't have any expectations.
They were preseason number one this year, right?
I know, which, by the way, another nugget. I don't remember if you sent me this or TJ sent me this. Somebody sent me this. What, had they been the preseason number one five times? And
never made it to the Sweet 16.
Never made it to the Sweet 16. Although I will contend, I believe they were preseason number one the Doak and Dot year. And I have never been as certain about a college basketball team winning a national championship as I was that that team was going to win a national championship. So that's a little bit of an outlier there, but it's been, that has been very, very difficult to withstand. They are the second team, I believe this according to ESPN, second preseason number one to lose in the first round, joining only themselves back in 2005.
Well, and you know, another first is the fact that, you know, it's been 19 years since they were eliminated in the first round, and you have to go all the way back to when they got bounced by Bradley in the first round of the NCAA tournament to go home. And I was trying to figure out last night, I was thinking about all the different, there have been several early tournament exits for Kansas over the years in the Bill Self era. And I thought, well, was it the Northern Iowa game? Well, no, that was the second round game. Was it the VCU game and Shaka Smart? No, that was the second round game. It's all the way back to 2006 with Bradley, the year before 2005. That was when they were upset by Bucknell in the first round. So you had back-to-back first-round exits for the Jayhawks. And, you know, after that, the team settles in. A couple years later, they win a natty with Self over Calipari's Memphis team. And then it's just been a streak of, you know, of wins in the tournament where I think it was 17 straight years that Bill Self has advanced past the first round until yesterday.
And Arkansas is good. I don't want to take anything away from Arkansas either. Kansas was in a position to win that game. I thought Cal did a really nice job in that game. They did something for a large port. It took Kansas a half and a half of a half to adjust to what Cal was doing to them offensively. I don't think Kansas was ready for what Arkansas did.
They weren't.
They took a center who averaged 6 points a game, and he had by I think the 12-minute mark of the second half, he had taken 17 shots, and listen, you live with the shots he was taking.
Yeah.
Right. He was taking like 18-foot jumpers and acting like Steph Curry out there with his floater, and they were falling, and credit to them, but Kansas adjusted to that. But I thought Cal had a nice game plan.
And Arkansas didn't beat the Jayhawks by shooting a bunch of threes and looking good. That's not their game. And so that wasn't the way that they beat the Jayhawks. I did think that, you know, Bill Self adjusted in the second half to a zone, and that helped.
Oh, yeah.
That helped really lock down defensively and try to limit what Arkansas wanted to do. Because I'm watching the first half, and I'm like, man, you know, Kansas gives up 47 first half points. They will not win this game if they do that in the second half. And they didn't do that in the second half.
Not in the beginning.
They locked down defensively.
Well, yeah, because they go to the zone. You got to shoot your way out of a zone. Arkansas doesn't shoot. They probably should have been zoned up earlier, I guess. And they were, you know, Hunter Dickinson was in foul trouble. He wasn't playing well anyway. So then you had this lineup with, you know, with Flory and KJ that was working.
Yep.
Like, it was working. And then it just fell apart. Real quick, KJ Adams.
Yeah.
Sounds like Achilles.
A bummer.
I mean, if there was ever a player that deserved it less, right? That's a bummer. That's a tough way to see that go down. All right, we're going to come back. We'll get into some Chiefs talk in the second hour. We've got Jalen Thompson, Matt Hamilton, general manager of the Wind Surge, will preview their season with us in the next hour, too. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. As we start hour number two here from Homegrown, our friends letting us come over. We are having a little breakfast in the breaks, so forgive us if we've got, you know, food in my teeth. Can't tell.
It was pretty good. I mean, we kind of shoveled it in.
We got about halfway home. We'll get the rest on the next break. We appreciate them so much for letting us come over here as the wind was just a little bit too much for us here in the first part of the day. But it'll die down when the festivities down here in downtown Wichita get kicking up again. Hopefully you're able to come down. If you see us out and about, say hi. We'd love to see you down here. we're proud of everybody for putting on such a great event. Yesterday was perfect. Saturday is going to be perfect. And I think today will be fun. I think it'll be a good time. All right, 3570 Golf Coat, Tommy. It's Friday Fit. We always talk about it on Fridays. You have been repping some of their gear. So tell us about that first, and then we'll tell you about a giveaway. So stay tuned here because you're going to have a chance at a giveaway to some great local apparel.
Yeah, so 3570 Golf Co., if you are unaware, they're a locally owned, family-owned golf apparel company based right here in Wichita. All of their designs of their clothing, their polos, their hoodies, all of that invoke the feeling of this part of the country. We talked in the last hour about Wichita hospitality here for the NCAA tournament. That's what their apparel feels like. It feels like home. It feels like the heartland, the plains, the Midwest, all of that. And their designs of their clothing reflect that. And so even if you're not necessarily a golfer, and even if you're not looking for golf clothing, their designs on their polos and everything that they've got, great for work, great for play, great for all of it. And so you can check them out online at 35x70golfco.com.
So you have that, and then we have a chance for you to win some apparel from 3570. So we have a $120 gift card right now that you can get your hands on. This contest ends today. It's the last day for it.
It does. It actually ends at 11 a.m. So as soon as we're done off the air today, that's when it closes.
So your chances to enter are with us on the air today, and that's it. And all you have to do to enter is text. It's a text contest. So the keyword is golf, and you send that to 20357. You text the word golf to 20357, and you will have a chance at a $120 gift card to 35x70 Golf Co. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. And again, you have about 3 hours to get that entered. Golf 20357. We talked a lot of tournament there in hour number one. We'll go back to Kansas before the end of the show. So we'll have that coming for you. We'll talk more about the games that were played here in Wichita as well. Two guests coming up. We've got Jalen Thompson coming up this hour to talk Royals. And then a little more baseball talk at 9:40. Matt Hamilton, general manager, in that full-time role now this year, is going to come over and get ready because their season starts. The wind surge season starts soon. So what do they have going on? What do you need to know about their season? We'll talk to Matt Hamilton about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour as well. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to talk some Chiefs this hour, Tommy, as they make a big move yesterday. Again, they are having a really interesting offseason as Charles Omenihue is back now. So we'll go into that story. But before we talk Chiefs in the next segment, we got to take a minute for one of the sadder stories we've covered here. Dan Israel, who is, if you've listened to this show for as long as I've been a part of this show, now a decade or so, has been our Chiefs insider. He died yesterday after a long battle with cancer. We had known Dan was fighting it pretty hard this past season. There are times he would call into this show, and his only ask was to move him back a segment because he had a cancer treatment that he was dealing with. Dan is the biggest Chiefs fan, biggest Chiefs Kingdom fan, I think, as much as anything that I've ever met. I've never met anybody with more energy for the thing that they do. And he loved it. And we loved him. And I know Chiefs Kingdom loved him. And he was such a big part of that radio network, which is unlike any other in the NFL. And we're so sad to hear the news that he died yesterday.
You and I deal with a lot of people in the media day in and day out. We work with quite a few of them. We are colleagues with a lot of them, come in contact with a lot of different people in this industry. And I don't know if there's anybody out there that I have encountered that was so generous and gracious and Dan Israel was with us and with everybody for that matter. And it would be really easy for somebody in his position, you know, being the executive producer of the Chiefs radio network, the guy who runs the ship, like keeps everything pointed in the right direction for a team that has had tremendous success in the last few years, multiple Super Bowl championships, dynasty, all of that. To say at some point, you know, to people like you and I here in Wichita, not even their primary market, yeah, I don't have time for you. Yeah, I don't have time to do, you know, a segment or come on your show or talk about the Chiefs or whatever. And that was never the case with Dan Israel, ever.
Every week of the season, every year, again, I believe as long as I've been doing Sports Daily, it's how I met Dan. I got to know Dan is through the show. I would imagine that he was doing it with Bruce even before then. Mitch jumps on with the KNS guys, and I feel terrible for Mitch. These guys were great friends.
Yeah. I mean, they'd worked together for multiple decades.
It's also a situation where somebody is remembered as fondly as he was, and I think a lot of people were aware of the battle he was facing, but it never bled through to what he was so passionate about. What he was so passionate about was Chiefs football, and that energy for Chiefs football, it just bled through everything, and it was such a perfect place for him to be on that radio network so that he didn't even have to hide it, right? Yeah. He just was so fired up for that team, and it was so fun for me over all these years to like experience the emotions of whatever had happened the week before, good, bad, like whatever it was. That was always the sense you got from Dan every Tuesday morning forever when he would come in, is just to be either devastated or fired up or overtly optimistic or anything. It was just such a raw feel for what the kingdom was feeling.
It was authentic.
It was
authentic and genuine. And he brought that on a weekly basis to us. And I'm sure, you know, to everyone that he talked to. And that's another thing too. You talk about how generous and gracious he was with his time. There are a lot of roles in this industry where you've got to be kind of muted sometimes.
Right.
You can't totally be authentic all the time. We try to be as authentic as we possibly can on this program, but you know, I'm sure there are some real opinions that, you know, occasionally you can't express the way that you maybe would want to totally. Maybe 100% of the way. Like you can maybe get 95% of the way, yeah, but I don't know if you can ever get fully 100%. Dan was fully 100% all the time.
The Chiefs were so lucky to have him. You can't openly. I mean, you can root for the home team. That's not what I'm saying. I think sometimes that gets overplayed. But like to just be in a position and have a job where you can very openly wave the flag. You know, it was so perfect, such a perfect fit. The Chiefs were so fortunate to have him too, because he directed and stirred the drink on what has become, I think, the premier radio group in the NFL. And there are some really good ones, and you know, recent success has a lot to do with it, but you don't hear more audio than you hear from the Chiefs radio network across the league. You just don't. And that's a big part of, you know, the production value that they've always had. They've always done a really good job. I listened to a lot of Chiefs games, especially when I first moved here, because I would be on the road. I'd be driving back from somewhere on a Sunday, and I would flip on and just go through the Chiefs radio network. And we're fortunate here, obviously, to have them be a part of our Odyssey team here in Wichita, and you know, have them be a part of our family too. Very, very lucky to have that.
Yeah. The other thing too, you know, with Dan, and I thought about this a lot last night after the news came out, is that it would have been so amazing for him to go out with a three-peat. And I know at the end of the day, that's not the most important thing. You know, he had been with that organization through really, really bad times, and he reveled in how great they had become. And the fact that he got to be a major part of the dynasty, and I know we saw the statements released from Clark Hunt and from Andy Reid last night, and all of that. I mean, it wasn't just he was close with the radio network folks like us and the people inside the Chiefs radio network. Our colleagues in Kansas City at 96.5 The Fan, I know he was close with all of them. But he was close with the Chiefs family internally as well. And, you know, so this loss is profound, and it extends beyond just us on the broadcast side. It's definitely organizationally felt as well.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the beauty of a network, is you get that. Andy Reid, you know, I love Dan Israel. He'll be missed by the Chiefs organization and never forgotten. He will not be forgotten. I mean, that's he's going to have a really cool legacy there. His legacy will be with the Chiefs forever, which is great. And you know, which Dan made that his life's mission professionally.
Yeah.
So we're real sad about it. We appreciate all the nice comments people have sent because of people hearing him, you know, knowing him through this show. It's a bummer for everybody, but rest in peace to Dan Israel. He will be, organizing something up in heaven, you know, giving us a call looking down on the Chiefs, partying hard.
I'm sure he'll be giving insider interviews up in heaven.
Yeah, next season. If you go and just look at some of the stories online of how he helped people, like from all walks of it up there in the media world, it's fantastic. So we will miss Dan a great deal this coming season. I know Chiefs Kingdom all will. So we wanted to spend just a second here to acknowledge what happened yesterday and pay as much of a tribute as we can. I don't even know how you do that to somebody who's meant so much to a community and an organization like that. But, you know, Dan would have a lot to say about this offseason. So in his honor, let's talk about this offseason next. Chiefs make another move. They are positioning themselves, I think, Tommy, to get back. They're running it back. Okay, two things on this Charles Omenihu signing. Two reasons I love it. That I love that they brought him back. Their defense was much better once he returned from injury last year. B, it's a one-year, $7 million deal. How in the world did Charles Omenihu not have a bigger market when we're seeing pass rushers paid the way we have seen them this offseason? How in the world did he not have a bigger market than 1 year, $7 million?
Well, I think it's an injury concern. I mean, I think there's the concern out there that, you know, he's not going to be able to produce consistently because he's often injured, or at least
he has
been. I would imagine that's driven his market down a little bit.
I get that. Man, if that's the only case, then the Chiefs, they just keep getting, I don't want to call it lucky. And look, because there was a time where, like, it didn't seem like a nice breakup. Omenihu seemed angry.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's going to be any happier now that he got a one-year, $7 million deal, but it's back with the Chiefs. I find that fascinating.
Well, and I think that, you know, you've got to, from a business perspective, be kind of shrewd, you know, and understand that with Omenihu and with the Chiefs, like, they sat back and waited. And it was kind of like, who's going to blink first? And does that mean that, you know, there's all warm, fuzzy feelings from Omenihu towards the Chiefs? Probably not, but that was the market, right? And it's a business negotiation. And at the end of the day, the value, your value is what somebody is willing to pay
always.
For. That's
sure.
The way it always is. And if there weren't a lot of other suitors out there, and it came down to a one-year, $7 million deal for Omenihu, and that's what the Chiefs were willing to do, and there weren't better suitors out there with more money for him, you've got to take what's on the table for you.
I just, like, it just, like, another thing that seems to fall the Chiefs' way this offseason. So 1 year, $7 million. Max told us yesterday they were around 16. I keep thinking they're not going to be able to do this. You know, they're going to need to be able to sign rookies and do all these things, but they have essentially, outside of Justin Reed now and Joe Tooney, brought everything back. Am I missing anybody?
Derek Nnadi.
Okay. They will have a draft to do that. Then they lose D-Hop, but they gain Rashi Rice at least for a little bit. So
they lost. I mean, this is, you know, not a huge deal. They lose Samaje Perine. So that's one too.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about that one.
Yeah.
But it's so you. So you don't lose. Reed is a big loss, but I did not think they were going to be able to keep as much as they've kept. Tooney is the biggest loss, but you've had a plan already. We've seen the plan for Tooney. Now we see Omenihu come back, and we've been talking about their need for pass rushers. I don't think that changes, by the way. I still think they need one, but now I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't know what they'll do. Like, they do not have a clear need, I don't think, on the team right now, which is always a great position to be in when you're drafting, especially when you're drafting late in the first round, because somebody will fall to you. I don't think they have a clear need right now.
I mean, look, I think that you've got to I think you need to have a contingency plan offensive line wise.
Well,
I mean, I think you can still classify that as a need.
It's a need. That's not what I'm saying. Well, I guess my point is, like, if you don't have a clear, like, draft need and you don't have a million holes to fill, if there is a left tackle that you love early in this draft, sell your draft out and go get them. Now's the time.
Are you saying trade up?
Trade up.
Trade up as high as you can to get your guy?
Yes. If you love one this year, you move up and you get that done. And in a worst case, well, let's not say a worst case. In a best case, Moore plays left tackle. This rookie plays right tackle. Which in the NFL, somebody's going to get hurt at some point. You've got three. You can let this rookie or whoever get acclimated. It gives you a backup. Like, it's if you're going to do it, now that you don't need a pass rusher, you can always draft a pass rusher. But now that there's not a clear, like, we don't have one because you got a Minshew back. If you were ever going to do it, now's the time. But you have to love the player. Like, you can't just do it to do it. They would have to, in their evaluation process, go through it and be like, that's the guy. Like, that is the guy, and go get him. I think this would be the year to do it.
I wouldn't mind them looking at, you know, potentially secondary early on in the draft too. And that could very well be a cornerback as, you know, again, another added piece or contingency plan. If it happens where you end up losing Trent McDuffie, if you can't get him extended, then you've got, you know, more young depth to kind of build back.
I don't know if I'd want to see him trade up for that, though.
I wouldn't suggest they trade up for that necessarily, but I wouldn't mind, you know, at 31.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If there's a guy that you like at cornerback or even at safety, because you don't have Justin Reed anymore and you're relying on a couple of other guys, you know, back there this coming season, to have an added depth piece that could transition and turn into something more.
The easiest answer is just go best player available there. I mean, you can use somebody in the secondary. You could use the linebacker. You can always use a pass rusher. I don't think it'll be wide receiver now. I don't think it will be running back, but an offensive lineman. Like, there are a lot of places they could just take. I mean, tight end, if they don't, and don't sleep on it, right? It wouldn't be a terrible option, but I think that all of those are on the table. I think you could do any of those things, and it would be perfectly fine. You just take the best player. That's what great teams do all the time when they don't have clear needs. And we went into this offseason thinking the Chiefs were going to have clear needs. They couldn't bring everybody back. They weren't going to be able to do that because there were too many of them. Well, they've lost two of them, and everybody else is back. I didn't expect that. I didn't think there was any way that could happen. Now, I'm not even saying that it was like the best case scenario for the Chiefs this offseason, because I don't think that's true either. They could have landed a big time left tackle and none of these other players would have come. And that was probably the best case scenario. But they have so many options now. They can literally do anything on draft day.
I mean, I certainly didn't think that, you know, when we're sitting here in towards the end of March and the league year has, you know, started and free agency is underway and all of that, I certainly didn't think that we'd be sitting here talking about, it's essentially, by and large, the same team minus Joe Tooney and Justin Reed. Certainly didn't think that.
No. It didn't seem financially possible.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't seem like that was anything. We didn't even think Trey Smith was coming back. I mean, when this all started, we were like, yeah, Trey Smith's going to be gone. And then they tag him, and you're like, okay, maybe not. And then you see Nick Bolton get signed. And then you see, you know, who is next after Bolton? And then you see, well, Minshew was the most recent. And then it was just like one after, Juju.
Yeah.
Hollywood Brown.
Yep.
You're like, okay, well, they're bringing everybody back. You don't need to bring back D-Hop because you have Rice coming back. It's like, okay. I guess
Travis Kelce announces he's returning for another year.
I guess they are going to get them all. Yep. You know, and they have a decent, you know, they have some depth at safety. I think that one is not as urgent.
I think the question then becomes, if your roster is by and large the same as it was a season ago, yeah, they made it all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
They were kind of exposed in the Super Bowl by the Eagles. The Eagles are damn good.
Yeah.
But we also know that there were probably, conservatively 4 or 5 games that they maybe should have lost throughout the course of the season. How do you mitigate that from happening next
you
season?
Get healthy
with mainly the same personnel. You can't bank on that.
Well, no, but you also can't bank on all the bad luck with health they had last
Every
year.
Every team has bad luck.
You
health.
Do, including the Chiefs, but that was as bad as they've ever had it. And so I think that's a part of it. I look at it this way, maybe to take that a step further. The Chiefs that we saw in the final month of the season is a very different team than we saw in the first 2 months of the season, in a good way. Like, they were way better when they got healthy, way better. And so if, you know, are you going to go through a season and lose all your receivers again and like have all these injuries? No, probably not. Not that same type of collection, right? And so I think that's what you bank it on. And you have to be better on the line by the time you potentially get to another Super Bowl. And that I don't know that they can go do anything more than what they've done. And now you got to kind of, you've got your cards, you got to play them now. Or again, if you think that guy is there, and that's a short, that's more of a long-term move, you just go be done with this same thing we've been doing every offseason now for about the last five, which is looking for a left tackle.
Well, so let's take a look at the offense then. I'm talking as a whole, and the entire offense, not broken down by unit. If everything remains the same, and let's say they don't draft anybody of significance on the offense, and they put all of their draft picks or the main top ones on the defensive side of the ball going into this season, in your mind, is this offense better, worse, or the same as they were a season ago when they were league average?
Better, because Xavier Worthy has now found his stride. The one thing I'll say is we got to see how Rishi Rice comes back from injury, and we need to see what his legal status is. But I think going into this year, it's better. Because you would think Hollywood Brown is back, obviously, which he didn't play for the first part of the season. And Worthy has developed now. So I would say better. I don't think now that we've seen that offensive line last year play, it's hard to imagine they'll be worse on the left side. I think the worst case scenario is they're the same, right? So that let's even say that didn't change. They didn't get any better there. Now you have Worthy and Rice potentially out there together. Isaiah Pacheco is healthy. Yes, I would say the offense is better than the offense we saw at the beginning of last year.
I'm a little more measured on that. I think that as of right now, it's going to be about the same. And because I think that it's
same as we saw at the beginning of the year?
Well, it's a downgrade on the line, I think. And time will tell how Jalen Moore pans out, but I'm going to call it a downgrade for now because we just don't know. He started 7 games in his entire NFL career. We just don't know about him. And I think that there's still a major question mark right next to Jalen Moore. Is that Suamata Ia? Is that Wanya Morris? Will they be effective? What will that look like? All of that. So I think that right now you can say that until proven otherwise, the offensive line moves are a downgrade from having Joe Tooney as an anchor on the left side of the line. And so if the rest of the offense is the same personnel, and I know healthy, but the same personnel, you didn't really add anybody of significance from this last season to this year. Elijah Mitchell, he's not even anybody of significance.
No.
I think overall, it's probably, even if the offense and the skill positions got slightly better, I think it's a wash.
Are you saying the offense we saw at the end of the year or the offense we saw, during their stretches where they were getting lucky for a few weeks?
Well, I'm just talking personnel-wise. I'm talking
which offense, though? Because I think it's this, I think if you want to say it's the same as the ending offense, yes. But it's not the same as the beginning offense, because the beginning offense didn't have Hollywood Brown or Isaiah Pacheco on it, right? Those guys were hurt.
No, I mean, they had Isaiah Pacheco for the first handful of games.
But I'm talking about in that stretch where they weren't playing well offensively, right? In that stretch in the middle where they were getting lucky to win these games and their defense was carrying them.
But even all the way back at the very beginning of the season.
And they didn't have Rashee Rice.
If you remember, everybody was healthy at the beginning of the season, and they barely beat the Ravens. Like, it was a toe over the line by Isaiah Likely. Otherwise, the Chiefs don't win that game. They nearly lost to the Bengals in week 2. Like, these guys were healthy outside of Hollywood Brown, who they didn't have at all. They had everybody at the very beginning of the season.
They didn't. What game did Rashee Rice get hurt in?
Like, week 4? Week 3? Week 4? I'm talking, like, the very beginning of the regular season.
The offense...
The personnel was still there.
The offense that we saw that really concerned us last year did not have Rashee Rice, did not have Isaiah Pacheco, and did not have Hollywood Brown. So that's what I mean. This offense will be better. that offense? Will it be better than the offense that ended the season? I couldn't tell you that. I don't know.
I'm not sure that it's a better offense than what they started last season with. I think it might be the same. That's not the end of the world, but I don't think it's like mind-blowingly better than the way they started last season.
Yeah, Rashee Rice basically played three games. He got hurt at the very beginning of the Charger game. So he had three games. Their offense scored 27, 26, and 22 points in those games. So certainly against the Ravens and the Bengals, it was better, and then he was really good. But you know, I guess my offensive concerns came at injury in the middle of the season. But I do think – and the offensive line is the right question, but I look at it more as – and that I take from the end of the year, I guess, too. Like, is it – does it need to be better than it was with Joe Tooney at left tackle or better than it was with Joe Tooney at left guard?
Well, and because here's the other thing I think about. If I believe that right now, I'm not going to say the offense is worse than they were a year ago. I just think that it's probably a wash right now because I think the offensive line play got worse.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if fully healthy, all the skill position players might be slightly better. So I think it kind of balances itself out. But I do think as of right now, as it stands, the defense is probably worse.
The defense got worse. Yeah.
So overall,
but
if it's a wash on the offense and a downgrade on defense, then
they haven't had their draft yet.
You're right.
You know, and
they can turn that around with the draft.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and this is the better point and one we've been discussing for a long time with the Chiefs, even if they're slightly worse, we didn't foresee that being an opportunity this offseason. And even if they're slightly worse, they were still able to get to the Super Bowl. You're going to take your chance with Mahomes, Kelce, Reed, if you know you've got the ability to get to the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, yes, they may be the same team they were a year ago. The same team a year ago could absolutely win a Super Bowl next year. They almost won a Super Bowl last year. The Eagles are taking a step back. You know, the Eagles have lost some players. So I think all in all, for me, the point is, like, I have been impressed with what they've done because I think where they are now, I didn't think they had any chance to be there by this point. And they've been able to retain way more players than I thought they would. And again, if you ask me if I would take a lot of this or have Ronnie Stanley, I think I'd take this option. I do. I think I would. Ronnie Stanley was, we were putting too much into that.
Just tempering my expectations just because I want to see the way the draft plays out. I'm fine with the returners that are coming back and all of that overall. I'm not like super excited about this team's makeup right now.
But that was never going to be an option. I mean, you should be excited because they've got Mahomes. They got a chance to win a Super Bowl, but the Ravens got better. You know, the Bills got better. A lot of teams around them are getting better too. And we'll see how they navigate that. All right.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Jalen Thompson with us here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. We are live from the NCAA tournament down here in NASCAR Park. We are actually inside. Our friends from Homegrown brought us in, just had a delicious breakfast from them. Thanks for letting us get out of the wind here for a little bit, Jalen. It's probably not quite as windy out there. Are you still in Arizona or are you back in KC yet?
I came back to KC just a little early, and then I'm getting ready to go to Texas for those last two games.
And then we've got a season that starts, what, in a week, basically? So I cannot believe as we're sitting here in the middle of March Madness and like ground center that we're going to have baseball. Next, I got a fantasy baseball draft this weekend. Like, it's here. Like, we're here. And the Royals are going to be a big part of it. We've talked to you all spring training long about how they're not getting enough love. Knock on wood here. They survived, right, without any real significant injury, which is where you always start when you have big expectations for a season, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everyone is healthy. They still have a couple more games to go. I mean, the pieces are kind of falling in place. So now it's just about how do you manage these last 6-7 games that you might have until it's time to get rolling again.
You know, I would love to get your assessment on the way that you feel like Bobby Witt Jr. has progressed throughout spring training. We've seen, you know, some of those, big time home runs with the exit velocity off the bat through the roof, and you know, traveling 400 plus feet and that sort of thing. We know about his power. We know about, you know, how effective he is in that regard. But have you seen him be able to settle in to a point to where, as we've gone through spring training, he's going to be, you know, peak Bobby Witt Jr. on opening day?
I think so. Looking earlier in camp, you know, he was getting his timing together. You know, there was concern people had about a couple weeks ago when he's going to hit the first home run. Where's Bobby's power? And now he has four. So
yeah. He's hitting 411 feet dead center on the last.
Yeah. So I think that he had a scare with the left forearm contusion, getting hit by the pitch, but he was able to bounce back from that. Perks of being a young player that you can bounce back. If he's 34 or 44, I don't know how quickly he bounces back, but it took him a couple of days and he was back in action. So I think it's pretty clear that Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be ready to go. And I think another key part about helping him being ready to go is having Jonathan India, who has been outstanding this whole spring, hitting in front of him.
He's going to do exactly what they want him to do. I think Jalen Thompson with us, Royals beat reporter for the KC Star, at Jalen with an O, Thompson, on X, if you want to follow all his great work. Tell us about India then. So where's he going to play defensively? Is he going to rotate? And then you kind of alluded to it there. They're getting exactly what they wanted out of him offensively thus far, correct?
Yes, exactly. As far as what he's done offensively, it has been what the Royals have wanted, and it's everything that they desired when they acquired him for Brady Singer this offseason. I mean, the man can get on base. He can steal bases. He can, you know, really put pressure on an opposing pitcher because of his ability to just always tab a professional at bat. And I think that's what you want out of that leadoff spot, and that's what Jonathan India provides. As far as defense goes, I think the Royals are still going to be figuring that out going into the regular season. It's some days it could be at third base. Remember, he was drafted as a third baseman coming out of University of Florida. Some days he could play at second. Yep. Some days it could be in the outfield. I think the key for the Royals is going to be how well are some of their outfielders hitting and playing, because that could determine, well, where does Jonathan India play? If MJ Melendez is hitting well and he's off to a fast start, well, he's going to be in left field. Then where do you put Jonathan India? Is that at third base? Is that at him at second? Massey at DH? It's just so many ways they can go. But for right now, they're really happy with what India provides in the lineup, and he's going to be out there every day. We just don't know where that could be.
Let's talk a little bit about the fifth starter position. Jalen, I know that, you know, the rotation is pretty much set for the most part. We talked about, you know, the fifth spot in that rotation. Chris Bubich is a guy that has, you know, kind of come back in spring training and has pitched decently well during the time in Arizona. I would imagine that it's leaning more towards him to be that fifth guy in the rotation.
Yeah, I think that is what the Royals want to have happen. And I think that's probably what will happen when the final roster decisions come in. If you look very closely, we saw Daniel Lynch come into the game as a reliever a couple of days ago. And I think that was key that he did come in that late inning role, because that gives him more opportunities to potentially make this team as a in the bullpen, you know. And the Royals have to make that decision of, if Bubich is going to be the fifth starter, what do you do with Daniel Lynch? Has he done enough to be on the team in the bullpen? I think he has. I think what he's done this spring has been really remarkable, knowing that he has worked hard and he's another left-handed option that you can have just in case. But the question is always going to be, you can send Daniel Lynch to AAA and get regular and consistent starts in case of an injury in your starting rotation, or you can have him be in the bullpen as another option to, you know, eat some innings as a left-hander. So they have to decide what they want to do with that. And I think they will in the next couple of days. So that's going to be very interesting to see what they do with Daniel Lynch.
I'll bet she's in the bullpen. I think they need to protect themselves and I know him being a starter protects them to some degree, but he has done this long enough where if they need him to be a starter, he could convert what he can do out of the bullpen for the big league club. Cause I don't think he would factor into the back end right away is help the starters not be as pressed to go into deepest games early in the year. Mm-hmm. So I think he helps them there. I'm most curious though, Jalen, about the back end of the bullpen. Hunter Harvey's healthy. Is Ursig the closer and Harvey and MacArthur set him up? Do we have any indication? Is there a set way that Q wants us to go? He kind of seems like he likes to have it that way, but Ursig's the Swiss Army knife. So what do you expect to see at the end of games for the Royals out of the gates?
I think it's going to be Carlos Estevez as the guy that's going to be most likely finishing games. And that's really? Not to say that Ursig will not finish games, but he can operate in that fireman role. Well, you know, how the Astros had Josh Hader and do for so long when he was with them, you know, just come in and get the best hitters wherever they may be late in the game. So that could be in the seventh inning, that could be in the eighth inning.
And they used him that way last year. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you look at how the Royals want to play, they like matchups. So if the best matchup is in that eighth inning, like we saw, like Ursay came in and got some of those outs. Now you don't have to rely on him to get 4, 5, 6 outs. He can just get those three. You have Estevez to finish the game off. So I think that's kind of how they want to play it. But we'll see how it all comes together because, like you said, you have Hunter Harvey down there. You have John Schreiber down there. You have Sam Long. You have Angel Zerpa.
They still have MacArthur, don't they?
Yeah, MacArthur, but he's still limited with his injury.
So okay.
With his elbow surgery, he probably won't be back to start the season on opening day.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I know the Royals, Jalen, have over the last few days trimmed down their big league roster, getting ready for opening day. We know that Jack Caglione, who's had a phenomenal spring training, will start the season in the minors. I'm sure we'll see him at some point with the big league squad. But as we get closer and closer to opening day, are there still some decisions that still need to be made as far as the final roster? And if so, what are we looking at there?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to the guys that are out of options. So we mentioned Daniel Lynch. I think he probably maybe will be in that bullpen. I have him in my current projection in the bullpen. Yeah. But Carlos Hernandez is going to be someone that they still might have to consider because he's a flamethrower. He's someone that if he's out of options and if you let him go, then there's a chance that another team might pick him up and then you might lose a flamethrower. I don't know how much the Royals would want that to happen because they developed him and teams don't like giving away talent that they developed, but that's something I'm looking at. I'm also looking at like the bench spots, Nick Prado versus Nelson Velasquez, both are out of options. The Royals, they still have to fill their bench and could they go with one of those guys? I think I put Nick Prado up there because he's another homegrown talent that they drafted in the first round. Maybe they give him one more shot. Or maybe they go with someone that's not even on the roster for that last roster spot. So those are the two values I'm looking for. And I'm also looking at potentially do the Royals go with a utility man? Is it going to be Harold Castro? Is it going to be Kevin Biggio? Is it going to be Nick Lofton? No, last year they had Adam Frazier be that left-handed hitting specialist that could play in the infield and the outfield. Biggio and Castro can do that. Lofton's right-handed, but he can also do that as well. So those are just things that I'm looking at, and we'll see how they really want to decide those last kind of three spots that they have open.
A lot to chew on there. We'll be looking for those final spots. Follow Jalen on it. Before we let you go, Jalen, you're a Georgia guy, right?
Yes, sir.
Well,
pain.
We had that front. We had that front and center yesterday here in Wichita.
I was so embarrassed.
You should have come down. You should have come down.
I was going to. I said if they beat Gonzaga, I will come when they play Houston. Because I just. And then I was, but now I'm happy I didn't come because I would have been so bad making that 3-hour drive back.
It was bad.
I mean, Gonzaga shot lights out. They could not miss against Georgia.
Man.
I know.
There were a lot of Georgia fans here. I say a lot, but I talked to quite a few. Yeah. And they were pretty, they were excited to be here and having a great time on the way in the arena.
Not on the way out.
Not so much on the way out.
A lot of them left like midway through the second half. Like they were just like, yeah, we're done.
We talked secondhand, but there were a group of students that had driven here who had to drive back to make a 9 a.m. class. That's the most college thing ever.
That's a 16-hour drive.
That's a rough one. I did that in college. We did that all the time. We'd drive down to one college and go party and then drive back as we, whatever. Young again.
How do you guys feel about the Missouri teams getting knocked out? That's weird too.
Tommy loves it. He's a KU guy.
I'm a KU guy, but I will also say that I had Drake winning anyway. They were fantastic.
Drake's really good. Night. And Mizzou has a couple local connections to us here. So we actually, it would have been great to see them do well. Drake's really good. Really good. And we've got two great Tech Drake and Gonzaga Houston. There won't be a better combination of games in any region than what we're going to have here on Saturday. So, had to mention that. I knew you were a Georgia guy. Apologies. That didn't go well.
Next year. We'll be back next year.
There you go. There's always next year. That's what everybody's saying. That's what all but, you know, what is 32 plus another 48 teams. That's what all but 48 teams are saying right now.
That's right.
Jalen, we appreciate it. Go find Jalen. Find him on X at Jalen Thompson. Glad to have you back here in the Midwest and can't wait to get this season started and talk about it each and every week here on Sports Daily.
That's right. Thank you guys so much.